Hello, everyone. On this latest episode of Tech Stack, we're going to talk about the multitude of disclosures that came out of AMD's Financial Analyst Day. Coming up next. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Tech Stack. I am here with my compatriots, Mark Vina from Smart Tech Research, Francis Sadeko from Tyrius Research, and my partner and buddy, Dave Altavilla from Hot Tech Research and Analysis. I got my own name wrong on that one, but we're still good to go. Before we start today, I think the most important thing we have to talk about. Thank you to everybody that has subscribed to the channel. We broke 10,000 subscribers in less than 3 months. Thank you, everybody. We really appreciate it. But yeah, so let's see how everybody's doing quickly. Mark, how you doing? Busy week?
Well, I'm waiting for my playoff tickets that I can buy for the New York Giants because they've had such a great season so far. Putting the Giants aside, I'm in pretty good shape.
Gotcha. And Francis, I know you've had a ton of travel this week. How you doing?
I think we all have. Yeah, no, just trying to catch up today. But things are good. And we were both, Dave and I were both there in New York for the first part of the week. And it's definitely a lot of exciting stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a little jet lagged. I got home 1 a.m. last night from a trip to the West Coast. So forgive me if I'm a little slurry and tired. I don't mean it. I am just a little bit beat up. And Dave, how was your trip to New York? How'd everything go?
You know, the Big Apple never fails to impress. So it was good to be in the city. It was a little chilly out there, right, Francis? We had a little snow flurry in the morning.
I was just going to say that. I looked ahead to see, you know, which I should bring a jacket. It said 40, 50 degrees. No problem, right? I get off the plane, and what the forecast doesn't tell you is the other part of that, which is 40 degrees feels like 25. I was freezing my butt off.
all those thin-skinned West Coasters were a little chilly, but I was chilly. It was snowing that morning, but inside at the event at the NASDAQ, where AMD held their event at the NASDAQ, it was toasty warm and heating up because AMD had some pretty big disclosures. It was an action-packed day for sure.
Yeah, you know what? So let's start with a little bit of high level before we sort of tunnel into some of the tech. One of the things that struck me was AMD outlined a $1 trillion potential compute market, you know, in the not too distant future. Francis, why don't you give us the high level on how AMD thinks that's going to happen, where that huge growth is going to come from?
Well, so for them, just to clarify, that they made it a point to say that they felt that was the silicon TAM, not the total market TAM, right? So it's even bigger than that. Number's even bigger. And for them, that was their addressable market, and their ability to expand to that was driven by market demand, but also their expansion of their core capabilities. So that you could really see some of the latest M&A that they've done that are now starting to really ramp up for them, like the ZT Systems acquisition. That's huge. The Pensando acquisition. Those are all things that are positioning them, not to mention, obviously, Xilinx, which is kind of like the core to a lot of what they're doing in the AI world right now, but also in embedded. All of that matriculates to that expanding TAM that they feel they're going to be able to access over the next 2 to 5 years.
Yeah, it seems like they have a ton of opportunity under so many business units that it's almost obvious that they're going to have significant growth over the next few years. But to actually, you know, make that $1 trillion claim, I thought that was pretty big. Mark, how do you feel the initial announcements were received, you know, by the wider market? What was your high level takeaway after all of the announcements were made?
Well, Wall Street obviously reacted quite well to it. So I think that's always a positive. I mean, I've never, you know, I've dealt with AMD for years. I go back to my days at Compaq and Dell when, you know, AMD frankly was kind of the gang that couldn't shoot straight. But the reality is it's almost like a company that, you know, has almost no comparison to the company from the late 90s and 2000. That's of course true to due to Lisa Su, but they really presented a very compelling plan. I feel sorry for you, Francis and Dave. You know, it was a 4.5-hour extravaganza, a lot of technical stuff that was presented during the meeting. And I think at the end of the day, you know, they had a couple of goals. I mean, they wanted to present, first of all, they wanted to kind of articulate what the opportunity is. And Francis is right. That $1 trillion market opportunity is really confined to silicon, not the overall market. So it's a pretty big number. But I have, and I'll ask you guys to challenge this assertion, but I've never seen them outline such a detailed, ambitious plan. And let's face it, they have a great story to tell. You know, they're positioning themselves as an open platform versus NVIDIA. They are a full system stack company. You know, when you look at all the components and the attributes that they market. So they're really, you know, said to Wall Street, hey, come and get us. We got a really, really great, compelling story. We're a full platform company. And I think, you know, frankly, I think people walked away saying, you know what, they've got a story to tell that's actually credible. Now, they did also, by the way, also message that they're going to have to make some investments, which, by the way, is code for, hey, will that affect the margin line? They didn't really guide to that kind of concern. But when you tell the world, hey, we're making some big investments ahead of the projects that we're engaging in, you know, obviously execution becomes a big question mark, but they have been executing extremely well. So I don't judge them from the company they were, you know, 15 or 20 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Like AMD spoke to literally every product category. And yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong, I'm going to come to you next, Dave, but correct me if I'm wrong. Virtually every category was poised for growth. But the big news, obviously, was around AI. And the thing that has AMD, you know, in a great position moving into 2026 is their Helios rack. And they talked about Helios and current generation and next generation GPUs like the MI400 family and even the MI500 family. Dave, what was your takeaway from, you know, the more focused AI news and their rack scale solutions?
Yeah, I think that's really obviously the big, you know, pitch that they had at Investor Day, Financial Analyst Day, was the fact that they plan to be a significant player in the AI data center. By the way, the street did react to the disclosures that day very well. I think they were up 8 or 9% on the day that day or the following day rather. And if there was some softening in the market the day after, but AMD held what they gained. So, you know, the street did like what it heard. But to get back to your question, Marco, for me, the Helios rack is absolutely a culmination of executing their M&A strategy into a product and productizing on it. So if you look at what Mark Papermaster, the CTO of AMD, presented when he was going through the Helios rack architecture, Forrest Norrod stepped up as well, the SVP of the data center group. These guys stepped through how not only is it about MI450, MI350 now, 355, MI450 coming in 2026, but it's about Pensando next. It's about, the ZT architecture, the full rack scale architecture that they have put together with the help of the engineering resources they acquired with the ZT acquisition. So it really is a testament to Lisa Su, and the exec team and what they've put together with this M&A that they knew they needed. You know, they had these building blocks that they were missing. They had the silicon, they had the CPUs and the GPUs. By the way, EPYC processors were front and center as well. The expansion there with Venice, which is going to be their next generation data center cloud CPU. Every bit is important to the Helios rack architecture. But the culmination of all that M&A, actually turning it into a real, you know, product strategy and then executing on that and winning a deal with Oracle and the whole thing. It really is, you have to hand it to them, very impressive from the executive leadership team from Lisa Su on down.
Yeah, and
the only thing I would say, Dave and Marco, before we double click on some of the details, is just to kind of wrap up the top level stuff. That all aside from that $1 trillion TAM number, that all translates to basically their bottom line was 35% CAGR over the next 3 to 5 years revenue growth and commensurate margin and EPS growth as well along with that. So Mark, to your point, even though they're saying they're doing a lot of investing, it doesn't sound like they're looking to change their growth margin, how they've architected their business. And what that tells me, and I know they've made some moves in some of their strategic and M&A leadership, one of our old friends from the analyst communities over there now, but that tells me that they're looking to make some accretive type of acquisitions. If they do some startups, it'll be very, very kind of specific, but it tells me that the acquisitions they're looking at, if they do make any more acquisitions, are going to be relatively accretive. And maybe the last thing on the financials before we talk through that is those kinds of growths, you got to assume, especially in an audience like that, where it was primarily financial analysts, we were kind of just there from an industry tech standpoint. There weren't a lot of us, but you got to assume they were understating some of that growth. They have some internal numbers that are probably a lot bigger than that to feel comfortable to talk about that kind of growth. So that gives you a picture of maybe how confident they are.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the other thing they stepped out with was specifically a 60% CAGR number for AI specifically. So for AI data center, they put 60% on that product line. And I think, or in that, I should say, business unit. And I think that's probably conservative, because if you look at where they are today and the kind of deals they're courting now, yeah, there's some big numbers coming.
Yeah. And I would just add something to that. I would also say that, first of all, when I raised, when people raise questions about execution to the ambitious strategy, they have been at the acquisitions they've gone through over the last few years are actually paying off dividends, whether it's the ZT portion, Pensando, Xilinx. So I think that the fact that all these components are coming together in a very cohesive, compelling strategy. And I agree with Francis's point. I think if they're a savvy company, and they have kind of evolved into being a very savvy company, especially from a financial delivery standpoint, they will not want to show all their cards. So I think the numbers that they're showing are probably conservative, because you always want to be able to surprise the street with upsides. So I think that there's a lot of optimism with even the case that they presented.
Yeah, in the 25 plus years I've been in tech media and in the analyst world, it's always best to underpromise and overdeliver. Yeah. It's not just about the actual product or financials, but it's about the overall message. And you always want to give that perception that we've done better than we did better than we told you. Right? That's always helpful. But one thing that you guys all sort of touched on it in your comments to that last question to Dave is these rack scale solutions, and as AMD. I hesitate to call them a chip company anymore, right? They're offering way more than just chips. As AI demand increases, so too does the demand for EPYC CPUs, with solutions like this or Pensando NICs. Francis, why don't you, I know that AMD actually specifically said that they expect EPYC demand to increase, and that, don't forget that CPUs are important for these AI workloads. Francis, can you give a little color on what AMD's comments were in that regard and how you think it's going to play out, across a couple of different product lines?
Yeah. So what was interesting about it, and I think for us tech analysts, it's almost given that CPUs are not going away, right? GPUs are not going to take over. But it sounded like maybe that's a message that Wall Street needed to hear, because they made a pretty strong, they took some time to kind of really emphasize that. And absolutely, that's true. I think it was Mark Papermaster who was talking about that, and also talking about the fact that not only are CPUs going to be important, In some instances, some AI workloads are actually better done on a CPU, and that makes absolute sense. Completely agree with that. And to just, you know, put a bow on it, what they were actually saying was they've gone from being a good challenger to a de facto leader in data center CPUs, taking over Intel. So they have a 40% market share now in that space, and have a line of sight to go more than 50 in that time frame of 3 to 5 years. So, you know, definitely some strong, confident statements from them, and completely agree. It's going to be a heterogeneous computing world. Use the best tool for the job. Some workloads are going to be CPU. Some workloads are going to be GPU. Some workloads are going to be a combination of both. And the other thing that they talked about was the importance of not just the processing requirements or capabilities, but also your networking. You got to move this data around properly across multiple levels, from, you know, interact to across data centers, right? So I think that's going to be really important. One thing that they didn't talk about, and maybe because they haven't had an acquisition on this yet, is the importance of power and cooling as well, and also obviously memory. So you know, maybe those are some other areas that we'll hear from them about later. Not saying I heard anything. I'm just saying those are the areas that we think are going to be important outside of just you know, compute and networking.
Yeah, I mean, anytime AI comes up, the question of power, it just has to come up, because we're simply consuming so much power with these monstrous data centers. Right. I do want to double click a little deeper on some of the tech. I don't know how deep the disclosures were. I didn't attend. But before we get to some of those, you know, Mark, you know, hearing what Dave and Francis have had to say and digesting all of the disclosures, Do you feel that there was any part of AMD's message that was lacking or missing, or something that you had hoped they said to help drive their points home?
That's actually a good question. I mean, at the early part of it, you know, and they, of course, because I didn't see the agenda ahead of it because I was watching it live. I really thought that, you know, I wonder if this tripling down as an AI company, are they going to ignore the CPU part? And I think Forrest made the comment a few times. I think Papermaster made the comment a few times. It's that they are still very much a CPU company. So they gave a lot of love to it. The gaming stuff was mentioned. The client section was mentioned. So I really can't cite a specific thing that, you know, they left me in the dark about a particular area that they have not. But I think Francis is absolutely correct, is that there are still a couple of areas that I could see them making investments in. Don't know what they might be, but on the power side is absolutely critical, because given the unquenchable thirst for power, I could see an acquisition there. And I just said that every executive, because we all look for this when you're seeing 4, 5, 6 people present, are they talking off the same hymnal? And we'd love to get your guys' reaction, but I was very, very pleased in that they all talked in a very consistent manner. It was very complimentary. It wasn't a bunch of executives with disjointed presentations. It was very, very cohesive. And they this pitch, obviously, it was a 4.5-hour pitch. It was obviously something that's been in the works for a long time. So, I mean, they were kind of conducting themselves as if they were a company that's been doing this for, you know, with the kind of track record from an execution standpoint that they've been doing this for 20 years. And this is all Lisa Su administration kind of stuff. So that would be my observation.
Yeah. And the one other thing to consider, like if anybody claims to be an expert on the AI market, they're lying, because the AI market's brand new. There are no experts, right? We're all flying by the seat of our pants here, right? Even the companies making this stuff, they're hoping for certain things to happen, but this is all brand new, right? So let's all keep that in mind. But, you know, Dave, I want to come to you. There was so much stuff, you know, mentioned regarding a fifth-gen Infinity Fabric, you know, embedded tech with their FPGAs. And obviously, you know, I don't think there was many deep technical details on MI450 or MI500 given. But did you pick out any specifics or any of, you know, sort of deeper tech that they're expecting with, let's start with MI450. Like, how does AMD expect MI450 to stand out versus competition?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I do want to touch real quickly again on the EPYC side of things, Francis. You know, before we go MI450, Francis was spot on. It's the right tool for the job. Remember, these CPUs they're the orchestrators in these AI data center racks. Sure, it might be a one-to-many where it's CPU to GPU kind of configuration, but they're critical. Dan McNamara, actually SVP of the data center group at AMD, was the guy that presented that. And there's an 18% CAGR that he was putting a line in the sand on for EPYC and that market share expansion that Francis was talking about as well. So you have to really hand it to him. Really, you know, they are executing at CPUs very well, and they plan to capitalize on a growing market there. You know, AI demand will spur CPU demand, not just GPU. So yeah, MI450 was kind of a bomb that was dropped because we had heard about the deal. We'd heard about the next gen technology coming beyond MI350, 355, but we didn't really have a lot of details on it. And Damien, I know you're back there, buddy. If you could add it to the stage. They showed this slide for MI450. There it is right there. This is going to be a monster accelerator. It supports new precision. FP4, you'll notice, is on that slide. 432 gigs of HBM4 memory, 19 terabytes of bandwidth, 19.6 terabytes of bandwidth, and scale out at 300 gigabytes a second. Now, they also... I'm going to switch this. Let's see if I can make this happen. I'll slide this over a little bit. Sorry about that. They also did a compare versus Vera Rubin. So these are the performance metrics that they expect they're going to hit with MI450 versus NVIDIA's next gen. That's not even in full production right now. Vera Rubin. NVIDIA's getting out the door with this right now, but they're talking Q3 26 is when Helios is going to ship, when 450 makes a material impact in the market, second half, but they think right around, you know, sometime in Q3, early second half. And they think they have parity with NVIDIA's next gen, but they have more memory on board. 1.5x is their claim, and 1.5x the scale out bandwidth. So, you know, with, you know, not, certainly Infinity Fabric, and then how they extend beyond that with their various high bandwidth Ethernet connectivity. So really just an impressive, bold thing to do to compare versus NVIDIA this way. And they're going, it's not just, it used to be that, you know, you would think, MI325, 350 series, it's an inference machine. It's not a big, you know, training data center monster like Blackwell. Well, guess what? They're coming for it all. And yeah. Hey, you got to hand it to them. Good stuff.
Right? Yeah, you bring up a good point, Dave. Most comparisons like this that we see from everybody is they're usually comparing their latest stuff to the competitor's previous generation because, you know, hey, that's all the data that we got, right? We don't have access. So for them to actually be comparing against Vera Rubin is very telling. But also, what you mentioned, Dave, is the training thing. That is one of the things that they are expanding on from the MI350, which was primarily, and that was their kind of beachhead that they were accessing this market with. Clearly, they've established themselves there. And that was primarily inference. But they made it a point to talk about the fact that going into 450 and definitely 500, it's about both types of workloads, both training and inference, which is kind of funny because from an NVIDIA side, they were talking about the other way where they're saying, hey, yeah, we've talked about training a lot. We'll continue to have good stuff there. But now we're also architecting these things for inference. So it's shaping up to be, you know, I think about for the Titans over the next couple of years. This is going to be a really interesting area. And we haven't even talked about you know, Qualcomm entering that market too.
That's another podcast.
That's another podcast. Yeah. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting area for sure.
You stole my thunder, Francis, because I was going to say, like, often. Like you're totally right. Like often when companies are positioning their products against NVIDIA, we still see comparisons to Hopper.
Yeah.
But I think that this was really telling that AMD is trying to position against next gen. That's a really telling little nuance. That's a big deal. Now, I don't think there was many details on MI500 other
Not
than that
all.
It's coming.
That's right, about folks? It right there.
We spent a ton of time on AI. We got to squeeze in client, right? Near and dear to my heart. AMD, they talked about, I believe it was Medusa and Gorgon were the next gen. Now, other than obviously the next gen is going to be Zen 6, were there any technical details provided there? I'm gonna go to Francis. Francis, was there any sort of technical depth there, or was it just, hey, the next gen's coming?
No, I think it was just, and I could be forgetting, but I don't think there was as much other than they did show their roadmap of the things that they've accomplished so far, and then what Zen 5 did, and then what Zen 6 is going to do. Also, I think it was Mark Papermaster who you know made it a point to talk about RDNA. And that roadmap, going into next gen. But they did say the one thing that did stand out to me, which again is kind of to Mark's earlier point, it wasn't just a bunch of executives that were like talking about their specific area. They did talk about the fact that, hey, look, hybrid AI is going to be huge. You've got models that are happening now in that last year or maybe this year had to be on a data center. Next year, because of the rate of innovation, those models are now going to be small enough with the same performance to work on device. And so I think they were talking about that to make sure they made the connection between not just the data center strategies that they have, but also what's happening on client and workstation as well. So it's definitely part of a holistic plan for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Dave, am I cutting you off? Did you want to squeeze something in there?
No, I was just going to say that the Zen 6 mention, by the way, was relative to Epic. So it's data center. I'm not sure what we're going to see. I think we would have gotten more detail. Maybe they're saving it for the CES, bang. But Francis, you're right. There wasn't a lot of detail around client, except that, they've got these next generation architectures in the wings, and Gorgon Point, I think, is the next one on the horizon. Yeah. And then Medusa's after that. The other thing that we're forgetting, and I know we're trying to wrap on some of these other things, but is robotics. Their embedded group, embedded semi-custom group, is squarely focused on robotics now. I think NVIDIA, obviously, we've heard a lot from Jensen with respect to robots these days, but everybody sees the huge opportunity in autonomous machines in physical AI. And they see that opportunity as well. And they are now catering semi-custom, certainly their integrated x86 FPGA, processors, but also semi-custom solutions and embedded semi-custom solutions for that market.
Yeah, I mean, they essentially announced something new or advanced in every segment. And, we didn't even touch on software, but we'll save that for another discussion. that's actually, the thing that ties all of this together. But I think we should probably wrap. We put in a ton of time on this one. Once again, I want to thank everybody for getting us over the 10,000 subscriber mark in such a quick time. We really, really appreciate it. I want to thank Mark. I want to thank Francis. Thank Dave for an awesome discussion. I thought this was really lively. This was good stuff. And obviously AMD for providing, you know, so much content for us to talk about. and with that, if you enjoyed this episode, please like and subscribe. And don't forget to hit us all on our personal socials. We love to interact with readers and viewers. So if you have questions or have comments, please don't hesitate to reach out. And also drop a comment on these videos. Help that YouTube algorithm and help us grow even faster. And with that, I think we will say goodbye until the next Tech Stack.